Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We actually have Tammy Young back with us. This is another one of the emergent episodes. And folks, I want to really do this more on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. However, whenever they come up, so obviously I'm bumping my Friday feedback call. So unfortunately, I won't be able to address your feedback, but I will take care of that on Monday, because on Monday I try to do ancillary stuff as well. So don't worry. I will deal with all of your gripes, moans, and complaints on Monday. And I don't mean that you all have gripes, moans, and complaints, but I know that there's questions and things you want me to expound upon, and that's why I have Feedback Friday. But anyway, welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Awesome. So you're running for House District, I think I said 27 last time. Am I consistent in getting it right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, good. Awesome. So with running for House District 27, you're actually walking into, I don't want to say a buzzsaw, but you're walking into you're challenging an incumbent Republican.
Yes.
And you happen to be the county central committee chair of the Republican Party for that county that she represents.
Yes, that's true too.
And she's not too keen on your slant on the Constitution.
I mean, I don't know if that's how she would put it, but yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, I'll bet you, because as I looked real quick, and if you want to, we can go through those issues in a different call. I kind of want to keep the content moving, but I can easily look at every single one of her positions of the bills that she sponsored or supported or wrote. And her positions are accepting unconstitutional government and applying more unconstitutional government. And so I realize why America needs you on that. You ever see A Few Good Men? You ever see the movie with Jack Nicholas?
Although I don't even remember what it's about.
Okay, so Jack Nicholas was in it, and he was a Marine colonel down in Gitmo. And,
oh, that's right.
And so there was this point where, you know, Tom Cruise ordered him to say, did you order that road code red? And that, because that's what they called the blanket party, what we used to call when I was in a long time ago. But they said that, did you order that code red? And he goes, you're darn right, I did. And then he goes on about, you don't like me, but you need me on that fence. And he really states some real truth there. And unfortunately, what he did basically resulted in the death of a Marine, which means that he then admitted to a crime. But in what he's saying is, you need him on that fence. He's absolutely correct. We need challengers and champions of the Constitution, challengers of the status quo, challengers to these things that are contributing factors to our decay and our demise. We need people like you to step into the fray. And so I figured, I didn't want to prepare you for this. So folks, she has no idea what I'm going to say. And I want to preface this that I'm not, you know, in any way some holy divine person, you know, like God or anything like that. But I want to use a biblical similitude that I believe makes a great parallel to what you and other people will be facing until people start understanding. I have said this time and time again, that the true blood of what's going on in America, really the majority of that blood rests on the hands of we the people. And I say this because we have a system that allows us to control our government, and we have been educated. I mean, maybe it's not our fault, but the facts are there. I didn't have to be the only one to dredge this stuff up. Somebody could have done this before me. But I think what ended up happening is as somebody started realizing these things, they would get corrupted, they get caught in, and next thing you know, they're off making money doing something, and they're not pursuing what they need to do. I don't know why, but there's no doubt of what I'm saying. You are the one of many prophets, Jonah, that needs to go and tell the Philistines they're going to be destroyed. Do you know that story? Okay, great. So Jonah ran from that calling. He ran from that responsibility because he didn't want to go and stand in front of these people and basically tell them that they're going to be destroyed. It was basically, he's considered himself a dead man. God has called him to go perform a mission that would literally kill him. And so he ran, right? I mean, that's the big part of the story, right? He ran. And again, the divine hand of providence, our creator, had to have known Jonah and had to have known that what he was going to do was going to actually prepare him for this mission. And so even when Jonah said, you know what, I would rather die than do this. And God even interposed. He stopped him and said, you're not dying until you do what I commanded you to do by putting him in the belly of a fish. And then ultimately, where did Jonah end up getting spit out? Right there on the shore of the Philistines.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what's interesting is that, you know, when the thought came to me to that I needed to run for this position, you know, if you believe in personal inspiration, which I do, I kind of pushed that thought out of my mind because that's not something I ever planned on doing. I didn't understand how I could ever make this happen. You know, I'm in the middle of I've got a family. Anyways, ultimately, I went and prayed about it many, many, many times. And we sat down as a family and we prayed about it. And, you know, we went through the scriptures and we came up with the answers that I'd come to. And at the end of this, the end of this family meeting that we had, my 12-year-old daughter says, Mom, well, you better do it or you're going to get swallowed by a whale.
So actually the story of Jonah had come to you then. Wow. Yeah. Wow. So folks, I had no planning on this, right? I mean, you'll corroborate this. I kind of gave you a little heads up that I wanted to have this conversation, but you didn't know I was going to come at you this way. And I want to, yeah. So I want to put context to this because bottom line, what ended up happening was as Jonah was going through the process of, you know, running away, and again, like I said, he was willing to kill himself, but apparently he didn't have a knife to slit his own throat. He thought that he'd just throw himself into the deep and drowned, and he got swallowed up by a fish. He had no idea that that was going to happen, and then that his life would be preserved, and that he would end up being spit up on the shore pretty close to where God wanted him to go. And so the fact of the matter is I don't know everything. I wasn't there, and I missed the YouTube channel video of Jonah being swallowed and spit up. I'm sure they had it back then, but they've deleted it since then because they don't want everybody to know the truth. And I'm just being sarcastic, but because everybody believes that if it existed, it's on YouTube, right? But anyway, the reason I'm bringing this up and putting this in context is that there's no doubt in my mind that being in the belly of a mammal and the regardless of the veracity of what happened, there's no doubt in my mind that the digestive juices or what have you had to have had some pretty interesting effects on his hair, his skin, and those types of things. To where when he got spit out, he looked like some gadly person that, you know, nobody would even really wanted to look at. So that when he went and stood in front of the Philistines, he just didn't look like a normal guy, you know, and that here's a man that unlooks like any other man, and he's telling them that they're going to be destroyed, that the hand of God is going to come and destroy them. And that absolutely changed his, or changed their heart, and then it changed his heart, because what did he do? He got mad at God because he didn't destroy them. And so it's an interesting analogy, but now I want to place context on this election and the elections moving forward for you folks, because you need to understand this, that when you're going into office and you're actually telling people that these benefits that you're receiving from government, like your county, you know, having your driveway graded for you, you know, that's nice. But if you can't afford it to do it for yourself, where do you get off asking to have, you know, the government and the good people of your state to pay for that subsidy for you? In other words, we've got to stop the subsidies. If you can't afford to live where you live and have the nice things that you have, then you need to, everybody needs to learn to live within their budget and their capabilities. Maybe you do need to live in Cheyenne or Casper, and maybe that's one of the reasons why Cheyenne and Casper has become so, you know, opulent and so progressive, is because the good people keep on moving out. More importantly, we, the people, have the blood on our hands because we're not holding our government accountable, because we're not willing to go through the sacrifices. Folks, it's one or the other. You have to choose what pain you are going to suffer from. You're either going to have to deal with and suffer by not having your driveway dredged for you and plowed or graded, and do without those few little subsidies that shouldn't be coming to you in the first place, and get government right, or we're going to go bankrupt. And what's going to happen is, this is all fraudulent. They're going to create a condition where they steal this government away from you, and your liberty, the rule of law, our government, it's all going to be destroyed and taken away, and we will be ushered into the global communist plan. Is that what you want? And I don't think you do want that. I think that what you want is, you want people like Tammy, and maybe you yourself have the testinal fortitude to stand up and say, look, I'm not here to give you great news. We've beaten the crap out of ourselves by allowing our government to get so bloated into giving us everything. Either we put up with a little austerity, or we will be destitute, because when we lose the Constitution, it's all gone. You no longer have any rights of due process, any rights of petitioning for the redress of grievances. All of these rights will go away. Is that what you want? I mean, so in a way, you're telling people that all they have to do is kind of repent and say, you know what, I don't want government to do things that they shouldn't do anymore. We need government to get into compliance to the law that God gave us, this constitution that we've received in a higher order of governing mankind. And if we can do that, if you can actually help them understand that, because bottom line, I stand behind all these petitions we've got. And as people start reading the petition on the invasion, the petition regarding the UN and treaties, the petition regarding the court system, you know, and the fact that they think that they can create law, the health care, chemtrails, every single one of our petitions is founded on truth and our source documents of this nation. And so what I'm trying to say is that I know that this is a tough order, and I know it almost seems like the impossible mission. And there's a good likelihood that you may not get elected, but I believe that if you do not pull your punches, and you tell people the tough things that they don't want to hear, I honestly believe they will respect you. And I think, because I have faith in the Wyomingites. I have faith in the, and I said that right, it's not Wyomingians, it's Wyomingites, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I have faith in them. I have faith that they're going to man up and woman up and adult up and recognize that, you know what? It's not right that government does things they have no authority to do. And even though we may like some of the stuff, we definitely don't like the other stuff that they're doing. They're killing us.
Yeah.
And they're waging warfare against us. And they're using this little, oh, are you sure you want to give that up? Mm-hmm. You need to come with hope and promise. And bottom line, you need to tell them that if they're willing to actually do what's necessary in getting the government into compliance, all of the rules and regulations that keep the state and the good people of Wyoming from harvesting the resources and from being able to do the things that they're supposed to do. We've talked about this before. The fact that you guys have all of this coal and you can't ship it out to China. You can't ship your coal out because the Western states won't allow you to do that.
Yeah.
And Wyoming is being strangle-held because those states are violating the Constitution. So that's my point. If you got, and the state of Wyoming stood up and said, we want the constitutional compliance, you're sending the message that you want all these other states to be held to the same standard. If we all go down this path of demanding the rule of law be applied, then there's no doubt in my mind that Wyoming would be able to pick itself up by its bootstraps and actually really start becoming a leader and a productive leader. As a matter of fact, I could easily go down a rat hole, and I could probably, and I'm not even coming out onto a limb in saying this. I know that Wyoming could be probably the number one source of energy for the United States in ways nobody could imagine. And I'm not willing to have these conversations until we actually got states that are going down that path of getting, you know, into constitutional compliance. So we can shelve that for another day. But the bottom line is this nation and the state of Wyoming and your county need you. And I say that to everybody that's listening. They need you to get in this race. Now, here's the problem. Some of the people may be sovereign citizens. They may have actually surrendered their citizenship. Guess what? You're either going to have to take your citizenship back or you can't help us. And see, that's why I emphatically tell people, do not surrender your citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
This is we need people that can act and to do. And I, as a matter of fact, I even said last year, and it's out in my presidential campaign thing, what a constitutional president can do. I mean, it's not that I'm going to run for president, but if America wanted me for president, I go listen to those 13 shows. I'll tell you what I would do. It would probably kill me. There's no doubt in my mind, the globalists and everybody that, you know, has their hands into the pockets of the American people, they're all going to want to kill me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, if we do this through the states and that type of process, because technically the president, the constitutional president, could really get things shaken up, but he can't do it. It takes the states to actually do what is necessary in tearing apart the unconstitutional government. It's the same thing with the importance of the counties. The counties, only the counties have the authority to get that state and that state constitution back into order. And that is the essence of constitutions. And in some ways, I think Madison was brilliant. But in some ways, I don't think, because he didn't understand the county and the necessity of a county constitution, because these men didn't think the government, we would have to have highways and waterways and airways and all and communication waves and all of these things with technology that we're capable of doing today. They weren't thinking about these things. They were just thinking about what did they need to actually break away and become an independent sovereign nation outside of the British Empire. And they did a great job. And we're at that point where we need to we either start getting back on track and moving forward, or we're going to be pulled off this track permanently. So, any comments or anything else? I'm sorry. That was my monologue.
No, that was great.
Okay.
I agree with it wholeheartedly.
Okay.
It's something, you know, and that's the thing. We have to be willing to say, I can do this on my own, and I'm not going to expect the government to pay for this anymore.
Right. I mean, so having been in business and being a leader in business, even though I never made it, because a lot of times people didn't want to hear the real, you know, the real truth. Everybody wanted to feel good, but there have been studies and surveys done throughout the past 20, 30 years. And there seems to be a prevailing thought in these secret surveys that people, employees do not like to see their fellow employees or management employees not held accountable to the same standards. In other words, they don't like it when somebody does something. Everybody knows they did something wrong, and they're not held accountable. The prevailing thought is we all need to be held accountable. And the other thing is they want to hear the truth. I mean, even if they don't like the truth, they still want to. So that's a prevailing thought. And so even though you walk in and you tell people the real, honest, unvarnished truth, and they get their feelings, or, well, I didn't want to hear it that way. But, you know, are you going to shoot the messenger? Or are you going to take the message and make the necessary changes? And a lot of times people have to get over their bruises before they can actually turn, you know, in the right direction and do what they need to do. But the reason I'm bringing this up is if you're willing to have the leadership conversation, in other words, you know, who among you thinks that you're above the law? Because what you're receiving is equally unlawful. These benefits, they're not lawful. And even if you think they are, because government is allowing it, if it's not constitutional, it is not lawful.
Right.
And with all of the money that the federal government pours into Wyoming, I am here to tell you that none of that money going into Wyoming, there is nothing in the Constitution that the federal government is to actually pay states to function. It's unconstitutional. And as a matter of fact, Wyoming has enough resources. There would be a huge boon in Wyoming if all of the regulations were lifted. No doubt in my mind. If the federal government surrendered back to the state of Wyoming all of its unconstitutional land grabs, those parks are yours. Everything in that state is yours other than any air base or any real constitutional reason for the federal government to have that land. By the way, all of those Indian reservations in Wyoming and the rest of the West, the federal government does not have the authority to establish those. And so all of that land actually needs to be transitioned to the states, to those people, so that those people actually have deeds, and if they want to sell that land, it's up to them. That's their land. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But by allowing the federal government to have these little roosts and these little claws and then sending these money, they're actually pitting the Indians against the people of the states. The federal government is doing so many bad things now because they can get away with it. And the fact is, everybody that you're going to be speaking to, you know, if you give them the truth and say, are you a cowboy? I mean, every Wyomingite likes to, you know, consider themselves a cowboy. That's time to cowboy up then, because that's a very specific term. It's time to do what's right. It's time to get the job done.
Yes, it is.
And what that means is that you're actually, it's not about policies. It's not about these things that lawyer thinks would be good law. When those laws address things that have nothing to do with the Constitution, then it's equally unconstitutional. Regulating doctors that are performing abortions and creating standards for that. The state of Wyoming has no authority to even be involved in these things called abortions. And this is where this has to go down to the county. And when people say, well, what do we do? It's got to go right down to the county of the people. They have to create their own constitution. And in that constitution, do you want the county government to regulate abortion or not? If you want to make that legal, then that's up to you at the county. So guess what? In Wyoming, you may have abortions legal in Casper, in Cheyenne, and maybe Jackson Hole. And that's it. But that's it. And nowhere else will there ever be abortions ever again. And the people will not be funding it. Maybe the people within those counties will. And that will be a sad day because no person should be conscripted to have money taken from them to kill another person, especially an innocent child. So those types of things and stating those things, and if, every time you drill into these issues that she's trying to make political hay on for her to be reelected, now if you expose her, because I would love to sit down and go through the list that she has up on Ballotpedia and go through these things, and you go, oh, my gosh, oh, wow, you know, there's nothing to talk about. Why would you want to talk about her record of tyranny or her involvement in waging tyranny amongst the people of Wyoming? She should actually be banned from public service. The fact that she voted against the Republic Review Committee bill disqualifies her for public service. And you can take that position and let her try to sue you for libel. The reality is, as a public servant who takes the oath to support, obey, and defend that Constitution, that committee required full support and obedience and defending the Constitution. The fact that she voted against it means she went against her oath, period. And so this gives you all the empowerment. And you know what? There's nothing better than to be the one person on the top of the mountain stating the truth. Because you can't get knocked off. People may not like you. They may hate you. They won't vote for you. But, you know, and there's this old saying, all alone in Wrightsville. You know, because 9 times out of 10, the person that's right all the time, nobody likes. And you kind of, you know, live this lonely life. Okay, if so be it. But I honestly believe if you're putting context to the message, and people are starting to understand that that's not your fault that their feelings are hurt. The fact is that they're actually doing those things that are hurting their feelings. And if they want to change, if they cared about this nation, then they're going to do what's necessary to actually get this nation back on track. And the only way to do that is by electing champions of the Constitution. And you can actually, I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know the Constitution like G.R. Mobley. But the nice thing is, he mentors me. I mean, I have a relationship. Whenever I don't understand something, I know he's there. And as a matter of fact, one of the things we need to do, if we create these Constitution Compliance Committees like we should have done, that she voted against, they would have created a Constitution Compliance Office with all the resources. We would start having G.R. Mobleys everywhere.
Right.
That's what we need. And so, you know, what she's doing is she's keeping us down. Oh, don't, you know, we got the law. I'm a lawyer. You have me to take care of you. That's as evil as it comes. It's as evil as it comes. And, you know, the fact is, you know, everybody knows, at least they know how my feelings on law, the law and lawyers, you know, that most of these folks, they are a huge parasite. They're a huge part of the problem. And so, you know, we need to actually get back to the 13th Amendment. And, oh, by the way, that's why I included that in the Why Counties Matter Most. The fact that in the compiled laws of Wyoming, in your record book that was actually published in Wyoming, the original 13th Amendment that kept lawyers from being citizens of the United States and not able to serve as public servants, that's a huge thing. As a matter of fact, if we're actually following the law, she can't even serve. Go read the original 13th Amendment, not the one that's in the Constitution today, but the original one. And you'll actually find it in my color-coded Constitution. It was ratified in 1812. And it somehow, and that's why it's in that book. The 13th Amendment is actually in that compiled laws of Wyoming that was published in 1870-something. I think it was 1874, 72, somewhere around there. But it was in the 1870s, and the 13th Amendment was actually, that original 13th Amendment was actually in there.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, I I know you've got a challenge, and I know that you're probably heading into what would seem like a headwind. But sometimes when we're going with the truth, you have far more of a tailwind than a headwind. And then sometimes, if you've ever noticed, when the tailwind is so strong, it actually brings your hair back around and starts whipping your face with your hair. So it seems like, is this a headwind or is this a tailwind?
And oh, well, that's a good analogy.
Right. So doing the right thing is to me far more important, and saying the right things. So anyway, we're going through the Kentucky resolutions, and this is why this is so important, because as we talk about the Kentucky resolutions, we're looking at the fact of what Jefferson is doing. And did you kind of notice, if you've gone back through each of those resolutions, how he highlighted how these laws were directly violating the Constitution? And so, right, so we're going into Resolution 7. And so he pretty much is almost finished with the auditing process. And now he's getting into the administrative things of what needs to happen. And so we've got maybe 10 minutes. So we've got some time to cover at least Resolution 7 if you're game for it.
Okay.
And before, I know I kind of hogged the mic, so I'll let you do the reading if that's okay. And if there's a question or something you don't know, that's okay. Let me know, and I will help highlight it. And, you know, like Sundry, you mentioned that before, so let's mention that when you hit it, and I will explain to that. Because people don't, if they don't know, if you don't know, there's a good chance other people don't know. So by all means, I always assume, since I know, I never stop myself what all these words mean. So it's really helpful to have somebody else do this. So thank you so much, and go ahead. I'll shut myself up now.
Okay, so we're going to read 7. It says, resolved that the construction applied by the general government, as it is evidenced by sundry of their proceedings. And again, we discussed that sundry is variety.
Yeah, so the sundry means a variety, a variety, correct.
Okay. A sundry of their proceedings to those parts of the Constitution of the United States which delegate to Congress a power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, and to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof, goes to the destruction of all limits prescribed to their powers by the Constitution.
Okay, so what you didn't do is you didn't use the quotation. So right there is a quote, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, to pay the debts, blah, 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 and then close quote. And so when you hit the officers thereof, that was a close quote.
Because, okay.
Okay, so go ahead. Keep going.
So let's pause there, though, because that statement in the quotes has been so terribly misunderstood that people think that the government has the right to do anything that they want.
Right. So that last quotation, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the powers vested in Congress in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Now, one of the things that is important is you actually have to look at the one statement that he did not include. And because this is the necessary and proper clause, right? And the one thing that he did not include was into execution. Did he say that? I didn't notice that. Did he say
it's necessary and proper for carrying into execution?
Now, so he missed this, because if you look at the Constitution, this is what it says. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. So those few words, the foregoing powers, is not there.
Mm.
And then it says, the power, and so what it says in the Constitution, and all other powers vested by this Constitution. So either there was a typo by Jefferson, or in the capturing of the original text to this academic work that I pulled in, and I can actually go and verify this, but here's the problem right there. The whole point of the Necessary and Proper Clause hinges on carrying execution or carrying laws into execution for the foregoing powers. In other words, they just can't come up with any law that they think is necessary and proper. These laws that they're making are solely for the purpose of carrying into execution those specific powers. That's it. If it's not, this is where this concept of if it is not enumerated in the powers, and right there in Article 1, Section 8, they can't be making a law regarding it.
Right.
Then, because they don't have that authority. Okay, so that's what Thomas Jefferson is trying to point out. But there was that missing in that one clause, and I wanted to one jump that out. And then he moves on and finishes the whole clause, or in any department or officer thereof. So the point is this, is that when you look at the, and I'll actually dive into this because it's worth saying, when we look at the Supremacy Clause of Article 6, the Supremacy Clause creates the standard of all laws by saying this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. In other words, all laws made in pursuance to the Constitution. Some people don't understand what that means. All laws that are being made by Congress that are a direct derivative of the Constitution, and all treaties made or which shall be made under that direct authority of the United States as granted in the Constitution, not assumed authority, only those authorities within the Constitution. So this goes, we've talked about Indian tribes and the reservations. Is there anywhere in the Constitution where the federal government has the ability to have control over state land for Indian tribes? No. So they can't possess that land in those states. This is why Thomas Jefferson tried to amend the Constitution in 1803 to give them that authority. And Congress didn't want it. They said, no, we'll just keep pushing them west. They didn't realize that though they had to settle somewhere. So bottom line, every time they set up a state and there were Indians left in that state under federal reservations, that was all bogus. And the states went along with it because they didn't know any better.
Right.
And so there's some cleanup that we have to do, and there's going to be some people that are going to be really upset. But there's no way the federal government has the ability to manipulate one group over another group. And that's exactly what's been happening with the Indian tribes. That's exactly what's been happening with all of these different industries and other interests out there. And this is why we go through the ratification debates. But the point is, the Supremacy Clause clearly states that the federal government's laws, only those laws that are directly derivative and are treaties that are made under the enumerated authority, are legitimate. Mm-hmm. And they are the supreme law of the land. If it's not done that way, then they're not the supreme law. I'm telling you, folks, there's all sorts of laws and things that they've done that are not supreme. Now, technically, when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed, that is a legitimate law for the District of Columbia, but not for the states. And I think that the states should have their own similar Civil Rights Acts. We didn't need the Civil Rights Act because we had the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment stated, and it also created, it made all of these people that the courts were saying they couldn't be citizens, like Indians and blacks or slaves. The 14th Amendment fixed that. All people that were born here under the jurisdiction of the United States are citizens. those folks that come here illegally and their parents do not have any jurisdiction under the United States, in other words, they're under the jurisdiction of another nation like Mexico, then they're not citizens. These people that are being born here are not citizens because their parents aren't under that jurisdiction. So this concept of the anchor baby is absolutely, and it flies in the face of how this was debated. Specifically, they talked about this in the debates in Congress. So when we look at the 14th Amendment, more specifically on the privileges and immunities, no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. This is what applied the Bill of Rights so that any citizen, black, red, yellow, white, purple, pink, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your gender is. It doesn't matter how, you know, if you're kind of misguided in thinking you're a car, you know, whatever. You have fundamental rights that the Constitution protects, and no state can make or pass and enforce any law that abridges those privileges and immunities. So did we need the Act or the Civil Rights Act? No. The reason why they went down this dressing is they used that to get their nose, to get the camel's nose in the tent, to start controlling demographics in labor and all of these other things that they unconstitutionally control. Now they can come in and say, you're underrepresented in Hispanics in this community, in this area. I mean, and forgive me for saying this because we just ran out of time. So we'll have to go back to 7 when you come back. But I'll just part with this. I was working as a systems engineer in my former life. And one of the problems we have in engineering demographically is it seems like the only people that were studying to become engineers in the United States were white men. I mean, there were some blacks and there were some Hispanics, but hardly any women. And as a matter of fact, Posh, I think was his name, Randy Posh, he did a, you know, he had a few different endeavors with the Carnegie Mellon group in trying to get women involved in engineering and starting to do that type of stuff. Because engineering is a very challenging field. You have to understand math and those types of things. And so when the federal government starts coming in and saying, you don't have enough blacks in engineering, it doesn't mean we can go to the black tree and pick some engineers off that.
You know,
people have to make the choice to go into that career. So what ends up happening is you have to hire. And if somebody just puts an engineer next to their name, but they're not qualified or they're poorly qualified, they force bad labor on people because, there's these people that are, just kind of skimming across. The companies, all companies should have the freedom to be able to hire the best and the brightest and keep the most talented. When government starts inflicting, because of quotas and standards, and I'm not saying blacks can't be brilliant. I know plenty of them that are. I worked with my best friend was a former black Marine or dark green Marine is what we called him. And he called me a light green Marine. And we were really tight friends. And we still are to this day. The fact is that he was qualified. I had no reservations in hiring him. And as a matter of fact, out of my group, out of the entire, directorate that I was under in this business unit, I had the most diverse group out of the entire company. I had more women. I had some Asians. I had Hispanics. I mean, I had a very diverse, but it wasn't because I tried to and because they inflicted it upon me. It came to me as people were, I'll just say applying. Those people that were qualified, I hired.
Right.
And I think that I didn't even go out of my way to do that. But the point is that what Thomas Jefferson was talking about with the Supremacy Clause, we'll kind of clarify when we finish that. But we'll do that in the next time we have time to record again next week. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being willing to take that headwind on and charge into the light.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong headwind.
Yeah, that's but God bless you for doing it. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually go into a break, and then I'll come back and kind of close with a quasi-monologue, because bottom line, I keep on revisiting this with a lot of people. What form of government do we have? We're supposed to have a Republican form of government. And it seems like we have a party forum, a Democratic forum, a corporate forum, an executive, and so forth. So we're going to bring this back up, because if we want to restore this republic, we have to start understanding and demanding our republicanism. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
And actually, I need to change that, because we actually have a 202 number. And so if you go to the website, you'll get the new number. It is, again, a 202. It's a DC number. And sorry, I don't have it on the top of my head. Anyway, as I've been talking with a lot of candidates, not just Tammy in Wyoming, but in Washington State and in South Dakota and in all of these other states, even Missouri, a lot of people really think that we have this Republican form of government. As a matter of fact, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a Republican or a conservative, and I'm using this, rolling my eyes in the back of my head, they're clueless. They keep on saying, well, we're supposed to have a Republican form of government. They don't even understand or recognize a Republican form of government. And they keep on supporting, the party. And as a matter of fact, I can't tell you how many times I've weighed into different races between one conservative and another conservative, or alleged conservative, where, this guy's a rhino. They're both rhinos. None of them are champions of the Constitution. This has come up several times. If you want your party to actually start getting its head out of its backside and start actually kicking butt and getting things done by undoing and permanently undoing unconstitutional government and restoring your liberty and reclaiming the republic, you need to create bylaws at your county level where you must take an oath if you are in an elected position. Now, what's an elected position? Does that mean you're going to be a mayor or a county supervisor, commissioner, or something like that, sheriff? No. In the party, the precinct committee officer is an elected position. And all the positions of the the executive central committee, all of those positions are elected. And they're elected by these representatives. And who are these representatives? These precinct committee officers are representatives of the people of that precinct. So, in other words, even though they may not have to go and you hardly ever see their names on an election, there's people in your party that are actually, just getting these rollovers, and they're the ones that are causing all the problems. They just love being a part of the in gang, and they feel like they're doing something. Some of these people really know what they're doing, and they are happy about it. They're happy about destroying this country. And they're happy about being in the Republican Party, and nobody knows any better. You have to actually start getting engaged in your precinct, and you need to actually challenge whoever is in that precinct. And you've got to be a pain in every person's in that central committee. What is the central committee? The central committee is all of the PCOs, all of the elected leadership, the executive committee of your county. That's your central committee. And you need to be a pain in the butt in every in every case, every meeting. You know, when you walk in the room, if these are a bunch of flaming conservatives, you need to make sure their eyes roll in the back of their head. Oh, here comes the constitutionalist. Because you create that kind of reputation. And as a matter of fact, you need to actually start recruiting people, because I'm telling you, there will be lots of people that would be happy to actually step in and actually challenge these. Look at a precinct race. Go look at how many people actually vote in a precinct. As a matter of fact, just play a game. You know, if your precinct is wide open, have a friend challenge you. And, you know, let it go through where, you know, you're the one that campaigns and you're the one that gets elected. But just do a test run and find out how many people actually go out and vote for that precinct committee officer. And find out how many people, you know, you garner these votes. It's an easy race, folks. It's not like you have to spend any money. You just have to spend time walking around your neighborhood and knocking on doors and saying, hi, you know, I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm running for the precinct committee officer for the Republican Party, and I'm going to get involved, and I'm actually going to start kicking butt and taking names. We're going to start holding everybody accountable. We're going to start making bylaw changes and hold everybody to the Constitution. And you can, you know, there's all sorts of things you can do to actually get involved and start putting your name into these positions, you know, creating a little campaign and so forth. And then if your state has caucuses, you'll be able to, you know, run as a delegate to go participate at the county caucus and then participate at the, is it the state? Well, sometimes some states have, you go straight from the county to the state caucus, or I should say the state convention. And then some states actually have districts, congressional districts, legislative districts, what have you. So that's larger than just the county. And so depending on how your state breaks up. But bottom line, folks, you got to start getting involved. We need people just like Tammy, who's willing to get out into the heat, get out of the comfort chair, and actually start taking on these progressives that are actually calling themselves conservatives. We need to start challenging them. We need to actually change the word, the conservative word, to be the C word, like the conspiracy word or what have you, right? We need to create negative connotation, because the conservatives are the problems. They're not constitutionalists. They don't care about the Constitution. They just care about their guns. They just care about, you know, this one issue. Or maybe they don't even care about any issues in the Constitution. They just want the nice guy, the clean, wholesome guy, the guy that goes to church. Now, there's nothing wrong with the guy that goes to church, but that guy that goes to church has to understand whether he's in the party. At any point of serving in public service, if you're running for office, you're in public service. So what that means is these precinct committee officers are in public service. They're representing the people of their precinct. We can't marginalize these positions. We can't marginalize this. We have to start having people take the oath in every level, especially in the parties. We have to start doing this, and this will actually help us turn it around. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.